Well, someone's going to break the ice.
And the third question is just a simple one. Is I want to send it to my friend in America. Is there a medium to do that?
Well, we deal with that with a big poster. but yeah, that's the obvious question. So how does this make a difference? But honestly, this bird that flew off course became corrupted and couldn't defend itself. It becomes more and more artificial in order for these false forms of defence. It's so corrupted in the end that, you know, we have to have this sort of politically correct, we impose ideality as a sort of a dogma to make things fix it up. And it's not a real solution because the underlying problem's still there, this feeling of insecurity, this psychosis of the human makeup, this human condition. Now that, but the important point is, if you go back to that fundamental, simple situation, had that bird on day one of this battle been able to explain itself, sat down with its instinctive self and says, listen, mate, you are perfectly orientated to where you, in the case of migrating birds, should and shouldn't fly, but you don't understand a damn thing. Bear with me while I search for knowledge. When I make a mistake, by all means tell me I'm off course, but don't stop criticising me. He would never have got upset. The instinctive self said, good, now I understand that you're a different form of learning system, infinitely superior to the genetic one, this nerve-based one is. Insightful. I'll give you my guidance and I won't stop kicking you, you know. Now that little dialogue wasn't possible, but so it's 2 million light years late that science has found enough understanding of the nerve-based and gene-based learning system to make a reconciliation possible. But it's the same situation. Now we can go back into ourselves and confront all these issues with an understanding, and it does. This understanding will subside all the anger, egocentricity in the human makeup. So it's not an artificial, an artificial solution, a band-aid cure. It's a dealing with the underlying problem. And it doesn't happen overnight. In fact, it will take generations. In fact, once children have resigned, given up looking at this, it's so hard for the human mind to go back and consider it because they just believe that it's an unsafe zone to go. If you go there, I've been there once when I was very young, and I'll never go there again. So they're deaf to discussion of the human condition. There's a big section there about the deaf effect. People find it difficult reading about human condition because but children haven't yet resigned. They love it and can read the whole book in one go. It's astonishing. But adults find it very difficult because we're going to this forbidden zone. So the real beneficiaries will be children because they'll never have to resign. They ask, why are you shouting at each other? And we say, we're artificial. We're making jokes all day, talking about the weather. We never talk about anything real. We're all on a big wind trip, you know. And they say, yeah, that's what I thought,
Hang on, are you seriously thinking that 14-year-olds are going to read this book?
It's not a hard explanation. It's the honesty to begin with, it's enormous relief. And it applies to the adult too, because now we can go into this zone, this forbidden zone, and make sense of the dark side of ourselves. Because it's now rendered safe, because we've got this dignifying understanding that won't lead to criticism this time. So you can dismantle all the layers of the onion. Go back. We all want to get to peace, you know, and we want to stop the wars in the Middle East, and we want to stop the battle between the men and women. This, understand, we're a conscious being. Ultimately, I mean, religions teach us that God loves us, you know. But hell, we wanted to know why he did, you know. So religions could sustain us, but really, in the end of the day, we needed to understand ourselves, make sense of ourselves. And, you know, honesty is therapy, but we've never been able to be honest about ourselves. Know the truth about ourselves. Understanding is compassion, but we've never been able to understand ourselves. We've never been able to have compassion on ourselves. So this actually will, the more you understand and read it, the more I suggest it will dissolve those underlying frustrations that produce the dark side of ourselves. And the real beneficiaries will be children who don't even enter this state of denial. They'll never go into the cave. They'll stay in the sun. And that will be like different species to us. We are so in battle. The more you understand the human condition, and the more you see, God, it is the underlying thing that's going on. Everything we look at, you know, like my tie, everything's saturated with this insecurity of the human makeup. You get to realise that, you know, that we live in a tiny fortress corner of the potential of existence, hunkered up down in there, massively insecure, afraid of just about everything. So incredibly fragile. When this huge potential is now before us. We've been driven into this cave-like state, further and further back into the cave. In fact, alienation now is so great on Earth that children coming into it, hence this Harry Potter phenomenon, can't bridge the gap. They come in, alienation can't see alienation because it wouldn't be alienated if it could, you see what I mean? And adults now are so in denial, so alienated, so blocked out, that when children come into this world now, the gap that they've got to bridge is so unbridgeable, so big that they just can't face it, that it's too much to take on. So childhood madness, which ADD, you know, attention deficit, they're all expressions, but I just can't make the, I cannot get across there. That's going to require so much artificiality, so much blocking out, so much dying off, if I'm ever going to participate in that fraudulent state. And they rather go mad, and there's a section here on autism and stuff that explains it's just children can't face, it's too big an ask now for children coming into the world. It's no fault of the parents, it's where the human journey has got to. And when there's no acknowledgement, you know, people pulled in the paper, they got run over by a truck today, but no one reports that, you know, 10 million people just became 10 degrees more alienated than they were the day before. And so the dishonesty of our world now is astronomical. And it's time for honesty, you know, it's time to clean it all up. And to do that, you have to go down. There's this upriver story, have you ever heard that? All these people coming down, they're drowning, you know, and everybody's trying to get out, pull them into shore and save them. And finally someone says, this is ridiculous, someone's got to go upstream and find out who the bugger's pushing these people in. Get to the source of the problem. And I'm suggesting the human condition is the underlying issue.
So is this mostly talking about so-called Western societies?
Well, no, all societies. We went to folk at Queensland Union, we had an Aboriginal woman get up. She asked them, look, how about other cultures, Aboriginal cultures in particular, do they suffer from the human condition? And I said, look, my book, there's an essay in there about the denial of prehistory of the human race, which finally admits that there are different degrees of alienation between races. My earlier book was dedicated to the Bushmen of the Kalahari because their innocence, if you like, their freshness that Randabash wrote about in his books, sort of was confirmation where everyone's living in denial. They were still alive inside, if you like, okay? So, but relative on the, we're 2 million years alienated. The differences between races now is just minuscule. I mean, the Bushmen of the Kalahari, they employ humour. So obviously they're well aware of the human condition and they need it to sort of valve off the sort of artificiality of their being. You know, they wear, because sex is an attack on the innocence of women, and so they're wearing, you know, covering their genitals, so they're part of suffering from that. The women are into jewellery, accepting being objects of extraction for men, if you like. And so they're massively sort of affected by the human condition. And there's a section on there, but so, yeah, the human condition is universal between all races, but there are differences, but in a full spectrum of how alienated we are, the human race, it's bugger all. It's such a minuscule difference.
Peter, you were saying Harry Potter, because yeah. I have nine grandchildren, you were saying Harry Potter that it's good for the children because it is a fight against good and evil, and
is
an escapism, and perhaps they learn for the good and evil.
Well, it's something. Honestly, they love Dahl's book.
Yeah, not just Harry Potter, Fairy Tales and Roald Dahl.
Yeah, but even like Dahl's book, it's the honesty of those books, you know. I mean, we don't want to give them these childhood books like Roald Dahl's book because there's so much violence in them. But you see, we live in such denial. Our world is a horrifically dishonest and artificial and aggressive and competitive and false and in our world, and we're pretending to them that it's not, and they can see it, and nobody's admitting it. And these books at least go down and look at it from the child's point of view and say, well, when you're looking at it, the monsters are out there, big time, and that's the human race. They're all the adults, and they say, thank God someone's admitted it. You know, that's therapy for them.
Yes, because I was brought up in prison fairy tales, and I always look
at
the
rules.
So
yeah. It's we've had so little help for children, you know. That someone wants me to write a book about. This woman on the Gold Coast has written this review. She rang up, she's so excited about this because she got an 11-year-old and 9-year-old. She said, now, I've given a review at Pete today, I think, anyway, it's some Gold Coast newspaper, but it said, she said, I give it a 10 out of 10. She's so excited because of this essay on resignation, because it talks about what the zone that the children are coming into, where they're starting to question, and now she says, why can't you write about this story of resignation? and in sort of child's language. Mm-hmm. And I said, you'd be surprised. You just give them resignation. They're so cynical children now that no one really will talk about what's in their mind, mm-hmm. that they'll almost distrust everything from the adult world. It's not until they resign at 15 that they actually become part of the lie, because then they know why everybody's lying, you know. Holy dooly, I don't want to go near there again myself, you know. So they become part of the problem. And for the next generation. And then it's self-evident to them why everybody's so artificial. But prior to that, you know, they're still honest. And there's nobody communicating with them. It's an incredibly lonely world they're in. So it's very hard to win their trust back. If you were there, and they only ask the question once or twice before they soon work out that adults don't want to talk about this area. And you can talk to mothers, you know, with child around that 9, 10, 11, 12-year-old. And yeah, they say, well, they did ask me those questions. And then they stopped asking. And then a year or two later, they're in their room. Talk to school teachers. You cannot teach that 12, 13, 14, 15-year-old. They're just about impossible. They're in another world. There's astonishing... I just might read you one little quote. It's just... this is the Pulitzer Prize winner, Robert. There's few people even admit this that this is going on. And I think this is quite astonishing. This guy won a Pulitzer Prize, and I wouldn't mind betting that he won it for this paragraph. This is Robert Coles, The Moral Intelligence of Children. And this guy's a psychologist, right? So he's about to talk to this 15-year-old. And this is what he wrote. It's very interesting. I tell the loneliness many young people feel, even if they have a good number of friends. It's a loneliness that has to do with a self-imposed judgment of sorts. I am pushed and pulled in an array of urges, yearnings, worries, fears that I can't share with anyone, really. This sense of utter difference makes for a certain moodiness well known among adolescents, who are, after all, constantly trying to figure out exactly how they ought and might live. I remember a young man of 15 who engaged in light banter, only to shut down, shake his head, refuse to talk at all when his own life and troubles became the subject at hand. He had stopped going to school, began using large amounts of pot. He sat in his room for hours listening to rock music, the door closed. To myself, I called him a host of psychiatric names, withdrawn, depressed, possibly psychotic. Finally, I asked him about his head-shaking behaviour. I wondered whom he was thereby addressing. He replied, no one. I hesitated, gulped a bit, as I took a chance, not yourself. He looked right at me now, in a sustained stare for the first time. Why do you say that? I decided not to answer the question in the manner that I was trained as a psychologist to reply, on account of what I had surmised about him. What I thought was happening inside him. Instead, with some unease, I heard myself saying this: I've been there, I remember being there, remember when I felt I couldn't say a word to anyone. I still can remember those words, still remember feeling that I ought not to have spoken them. It was a breach of technique, of etiquette. The young man kept staring at me, didn't speak, at least with his mouth. When he took out his handkerchief and wiped his eyes, I realised they had begun to fill. Because momentarily he was tapping into what the child was really struggling with. There's lots of stuff like that in there about read the resignation essay, and it's unnervingly honest about what's really going on, about this what's happening in children's what happens to children. This is a 16-year-old who read my first book in pretty well one night. Before stumbling upon my first book, yeah, The Human Condition, that was discreetly shoved in the back of the philosophy. This is a 15-year-old girl, set philosophy section. I was the end of my road. I had experienced a year of complete and utter pain, confusion, anger and frustration. When I finally took the plunge to seek medical help, as I was suicidal, I was diagnosed with severe depression and put on medication. After reading your book, which I stayed up till 2 a.m. reading, I just couldn't put it down. I have been one of the fastest recovering depressants around. No wonder why. If everyone knew your insights, so much would be resolved. The purpose of this letter is to thank you for your courage in publishing your surely controversial work and for basically recovering and saving the 16-year-old. She was 16-year-old, sorry. Not only is your work the absolute truth, it has restored my faith in humanity, it has given me inspiration to help others. I may seem young to know what I'm talking about, but, well, I do. I have tested all your work and others, and yours always held up. Because you're finally talking about what's actually going on in their head. We don't born in this cave of denial. We're born in the sun. We're born innocent. As it was, the human condition's only been around since consciousness, which is only 2 million years old. The dome brain appears in the fossil record only 2 million years ago. So it's very recent in biological terms. So we come into the world expecting it like it to be like it was before that, which actually, if you read it, we weren't aggressive and brutal as you're taught. That's a contrived excuse. We're actually living cooperatively. We've been to heaven once already, the human species, and that was achieved through nurturing it. And there's a variety of chimpanzees called the bonobos who are living very, like we lived in this historic time in the Garden of Eden, cooperatively. And that was achieved through nurturing. It's explained how. I forgot what I was explaining. Sorry. Children come into the world innocent.
That was a joke.
Yes. Anyway, partner, she's not here, and she usually helps me. I get lost. We were born in the sun, and then we see the horror of the world in reality because we're not yet living in denial of it. And it's impossible for adults who have become immune to it and part of it and been through resignation to see it as clearly as children can. But they haven't adopted any protection yet of block out. So they feel it and see it all. So the amount of dying off that they've got to... look up Killing Heidi. Some of these songs that are going around now, they're amazing when you look at them in terms of this explanation.
Do you think a lot of the problem too, Jeremy, is that a lot of adults project themselves to a child when they have children?
Yeah, well, I'm just reading you, going all over the place here, but some of the quotes here from people who have been, adults who have been honest about children, the great questions are those an intelligent child asks, and getting no answer stops asking. I was always crushed as a kid because mum and dad couldn't answer all my questions, weren't you? Why are adults so silent? Why can't anyone remember what it's like to be a kid? Childhood is only happy and beautiful time in contemplation and retrospect. To the child, it's full of deep sorrows, the meaning of which is unknown. Parents are frequently wrong about the source of sources of stress in their children's lives, according to surveys by George Watkin and Mount Sinai Medical School. They think children are worried about friendship and popularity, but they're actually fretting about the grown-ups. And so it happens that although the paths of children cross with those of adults in 100 places every day, they never go in the same direction. They never go in the same direction, nor do they even rest in the same foundations. They're smashing bits of honesty. The biggest selling book, well, next to Harry Potter, it's just about stripped the Bible and everything, was to the Bible, to the religious text, was... St. Exbury's The Little Prince.
When you were talking about the bird, I was thinking about the bird stayed with the prince.
And what is it? The Little Prince takes the child's perspective again. And he goes from one planet to another, absolutely stunned by the idiots that he comes across. It's like he's hoarding everything, he gets old. Collecting everything, and it just got... And to the kid, he's insane. Then he's to another planet, got completely mad. And all these adults on these different planets, you see... And some quote in there that says to a child, the world of adults is very weird.
Odd,
is it? That's one, yeah. But, some of these quotes from childhood. This is Henry Lawson, the voice from over yonder. This is really kind of trying. Say it, think it if you dare. Have you ever thought and wondered why the man and God were sundered, split apart? Do you think the Maker blundered? That we're just a corrupted blight on the earth. And the voice in mocking accents answers only, I've been there. I've been to that state of trying to face that down, and the depression is so dangerous I'm not going there again. The title's called The Voice from Over Yonder. That's a rare bit of honesty of someone acknowledging that they once went there, had a look at it, and never again. This is a resignation poem. This is unbelievable. This is the price you pay when you resign, because you're going to have to kill off this magic sensitive soul, this instinctive self that knows about the sun, the rain, the moon, and in touch with all things. When you resign, you block out that condemning instinctive self, our soul, which was moving cooperatively, as you explained biologically, and this is stuff that biology hasn't today, mechanistic science hasn't acknowledged. So when you block out this condemning soul, you're killing, you're hurting one you love, you're hurting the best part of yourself. We've had to kill our soul. It's the most horrific thing we've had to do in order to do this job, the greater job of finding knowledge. At resignation, the child is standing there and facing ideality full on and reality. And that's an impossible job because the two, there's no reconciling, and there hasn't been any reconciling understanding, okay? But in that clarity, they can see the full consequences of what will happen if they resign. How artificially they're going to become. They know the price they're going to pay, but so terrifying is the depression that they take it. And this is a resignation poem written in that moment of clarity, what the price I'm going to pay. You will never have a home again. You will forget the bounds of family, and family will become just family. Smiles will never bloom on your heart again. But be fake. This is a 15-year-old one. But be fake, and you will speak fake words to fake people from your fake soul. What you do today, you will do tomorrow, and what you do tomorrow, you will do for the rest of your life. From now on, pressure, stress, pain, and the past can never be forgotten. You have no heart or soul, and then there are no good memories. Your mind and thoughts rule your body. That will hold all things inside it, bottled up, now impossible to be released. You are fake, you will be fake. You will be a supreme actor of happiness, but never be happy. Time, joy, and freedom will hardly come your way and never last. As you well know, others' lives and the dreams of things that you can never hope, have, or be part of will keep you alive. You will become like the rest of the world, a divine actor, trying to hide and suppress your fate, pretending it doesn't exist. There is only one way to escape society and the world you help build, but that is impossible, for no one can ever become a baby again. Instead, you spend the rest of your life trying to find the meaning of life and confused and in a maze. They're incredibly articulate. And if you don't believe me, go into your child's room at this bunker they've got when they're about 13 and have a look at some of their literature. Someone sent us a poem the other day from a 13-year-old. Another 15-year-old sent me a poem from a friend of his, and this poem was even more devastating than that and incredibly articulate. You'd think it was written by a professor from the literature department of the university. Incredibly astute and aware and articulate. And she wouldn't want to show her mother. And I said, well, I'd love to put it in this book. And I said, but you have to get your mother's permission. She said, I don't want to show my mother. And so I spoke to her mother and I spoke to the child and I said, so she finally did show her mother. But her mother broke out in tears and said, I didn't realise you were going through all this. And just couldn't cope with the shock of, you know, but this is the most extraordinary articulate poem. It's going to go in this book one day because it's just unbelievable. I mean, that poem there is pretty incredible. These resignation poems are devastating in their honesty. And they talk about the price they're going to pay to become, to die outside, to give up thinking honestly. We have what we call ships at sea. The odd person who doesn't properly resign and hangs on to ideality, and they go mad as a result. Instead of pulling into a port when the storm's rain, they stay out at sea and they pay a terrible price and go kind of mad. And I'll just read you. Schroeder, how do you spell Schroeder?
S-C-H-R-E.
Okay, 308. Sorry, I know we're running out of time. 308. I'll just read this one thing. This is somebody who read the book, was a shepherd, so he could hear it. And it helped make sense of everything, but it actually took him back to resignation, that moment of confrontation with the truth. But now he's got the defence for himself, which goes back to your question. It's going to be a very difficult journey back through the layers because you're going to have to face this thing again that you faced once before. This time you defended, but it takes some practice to use that new defence. That's in here when you read the check section on renegotiating resignation. But this is astonishing. 3 years ago, I read Jeremy Griffith's book and something happened about since trying to deal with. At the time, I was halfway through enlisting in the army when Jeremy's words hit home. Nothing could touch me in that time. Everything made perfect, absolute sense. Then things started to change. I wanted to go further, but something stopped me. And when I pushed, I felt the worst fear I'd ever known. Fear doesn't even come close to expressing. What do you suppose you do when you find the most fearful thing you'll ever encounter is yourself? I understand Jeremy's message of having to distance yourself from the truth, because you've got to cope with this by pacing yourself with this information, because it will knock you out. It's so truthful. People read books and there's books everywhere, and they just never ever believe that they're going to pick up a book one day that there's no bullshit, that it'll go right to the truth and out the other side. We've got to have all the truth or no truth. You either open this condition, open this subject, the human condition, up completely, or you leave it completely alone and just allude to it abstractly. So you've got to, and this will go right through the middle. It walks the line. It goes right down and deal with the human condition and take you safe to the other side. But nevertheless, it's massively going to, as if your foundations of your being, because all that artificially is suddenly destroyed. So you feel naked for a while. And so this is what happens when someone just lets it all come through. And so then they've got to be counseled to pace themselves with this. I understand Jerry's message of having to distance yourself from the truth. I don't know how to give in. All my life I've looked for understanding. When I find it doesn't sit well with me, they have to run away from it. If I let go, I may never be able to find it again. I've found ways to block, but I will never again be able to deny. I know I have to let go, but where do my responsibilities truly lie? In seeking truth and finding paths, or in denial? It was so beautiful. A whole other world exists in our minds that we have never rarely been seen. I will keep trying to find the middle ground, and thank you for being there. Goes on in that vein, but see, when we live in denial, that resignation poem I read said we're going to be fake, talk fake words, be fake. I mean, we are utterly an absolute ridiculous joke. I mean, all we do is when we talk about the weather, you know, or the football match, anything that we can't cope with anything any more deep than that. We're just interested in getting new fashions and just talking drivel and making a joke. And that's about it. That's about as superficial as that's about. We just live on the very meniscus of life. And that's a great tragedy, but we must be the most alienated species in the universe. But at the same time, we must be also the most heroic. What we have had to endure as a species, the more you understand it, the more compassion it brings to you. Tim talked about me being compassionate. It's just this knowledge. Everything you look at now, it just makes you love everything, because you can understand it, and the more you understand it, the more love you have for what has produced that, and how much courage it's taken to deal with it. It's incredibly humbling, and to yourself as well. The same process. You look at yourself and you start to see what you have actually been through, and how courageous you've been to get up in the morning and face the world. You know. Say, I'm not bad. One day, somewhere, sometime, some place in the future, we will explain ourselves and end this attrition, end this criticism, get the boot that's been screwing us into the dirt off our back, lift the burden of guilt from the human race. And when that day comes, we will be like another being. There's a quote in there from Shelley. Our wings are folded like thoughts in a dream. Our boat is asleep on Cicero's stream. Its wings are folded. Its sails are folded like thoughts in a dream. And it's true. We're just lulling in the eddies of the water, just hardly able to deal with anything. It's that we are that fragile. Anyway, I invite you to read the book.
And we do have the book down the back of the room if you'd like to buy a copy. I'm sure Jeremy will sign it for you. And thank you very much for coming.